Welcome to the Living Permaculture Show. I'm Jerome Osentowski, and my special guest is Michael Judd. Welcome to the show, Michael. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Jerome. Thanks for having me.
Great. You were on a couple of years ago when your book came out, the Edible Landscaping book with a permaculture twist, and then you came out and visited Crimpy, and we had a day at the farm, and you've got a new project right now. The interest in the pawpaw information, it's a mini manual for growing and caring of pawpaw, right?
That's right. It's called For the Love of Pawpaws.
Yes, and we're going to talk about that, but I want to first just introduce our guests to you again and talk about your history and maybe your 10 years of travel in Nicaragua and Spain and your work for the New York Botanical Gardens and sort of laying the groundwork for the experience you got and how that relates to your consulting business and your teaching and your whole development of your homestead there in Maryland. So why don't you,
sure,
why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
So I am Appalachian by birth and was raised mostly in Maryland here in the mountains of the Blue Ridge Mountains. But as a family, we moved to Northern England in the late 70s and early 80s, which was a really neat experience to see a whole different take of life. And then I've spent the majority of my adulthood, almost 20 years, living in rural Latin America, South America, Central America, Mexico, Cuba, with the majority of that time in Nicaragua. I started a grassroots permaculture-based nonprofit 17 years ago in Nicaragua called Project Bonafide that's focused on long-term food security through planting out perennial food systems. So nut trees, fruit trees, evergreens that are edible, finding resources that will withstand the inclement weather changes, and then on top of that, create niche markets for people.
And that was in Ometepe, right?
That's right, Isla Ometepe, a beautiful place, a powerful place. It's two volcanoes out in the middle of Lake Nicaragua. It's like the largest island in a freshwater lake in the world. And even so, it's quite rural and beautiful, and it's kind of like out of time in a way, which is nice because it's been out of the flow of commercialism, so it's almost old world in a lot of ways still, which is I think part of what drew me to living there. But I designed myself out of needing to be there, and the project flourishes. It's very international as far as volunteering and interns, and then it's national and regional focused on education and genetic diversity. It has an ongoing program for those who might want to go and visit. Definitely recommend. Ometepe is a great spot, and then, you know, this permaculture farm, which is now basically a huge food forest and permaculture sort of, you know, tropical manual, is a fascinating place to learn and to live. And so, yeah. ProjectBonafide.com is how you'd learn about that. And then I came back to the States. I've been back 7 years now, and to sort of, you know, create a living and interact with the challenges of where I live here in Maryland now, which has grown considerably and is very suburban. You know, this mid-Atlantic East Coast zone has been growing quickly, and trying to observe that and work with that energy and that change and the interests of suburbia and how to sort of work through those cultural interests to begin diversifying the landscapes, you know, working with the water harvesting, you know, getting more perennial food systems going here, but working through that cultural lens, you know, finding out where people are interested to interact with this, not jumping ahead and sort of waving a permaculture banner or anything, but really sort of working with the concept of edible landscaping And then slowly, you know, as we build swales and, you know, start food forest patches, you know, share the dynamics of that and slowly get people understanding about, you know, stacking functions and how permaculture, you know, works holistically, not just with growing food. So my first book, Edible Landscaping with a Permaculture Twist, was pretty much just the first 3 years of my work, working in sort of this cultural climate. And again, I simplified it and I made it very approachable and broke it down so that people would feel sort of encouraged to take steps and to start doing something and not feel overwhelmed. So I'm always trying to look at how to simplify and how to interact culturally wherever I am so that things can be adapted. I think I learned in Nicaragua that if you jump ahead with an idea, you know, you're going to be alone. You're not really going to have success. And you have to sort of step back from where you want to go and start where, you know, the culture is ready and then begin from that space. So that's been a huge lesson. And I think now I'm doing the same thing with the pawpaw. I'm realizing that, you know, the pawpaw is grows wonderfully here. I mean, again, in permaculture, we look for what does well. You know, where's the energy flowing and work with that. And the pawpaw here, it's at home here. It grows wild in the woods.
And it's exotic, too. And it's something unusual.
Exactly.
Yeah, and there's a whole cult around it. I see that you're...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... interviewed Andrew Moore, who wrote a book on pawpaw. Not the same kind of book you wrote, but just a more general of the history. And you had some close encounters with some of the breeders and some of the growers, and you include that in your manual as well, right?
Yeah. Well, Andrew Moore's book is great. I highly recommend that as a read for pawpaws. Andy's from my neck of the woods somewhat, too. He's up here in Pennsylvania. And he's a journalist and a writer and an adventurer. And he's coming from that point in his odyssey about the pawpaw and sort of tracking down the history of it. And then also, you know, where is it culturally now? It's a wonderful book. And my book is going to be very much sort of focused on the how-to. How do you work with the pawpaw? You know, how do you grow it? You know, how do you set the conditions for it? You know, what are some of the elements and dynamics to work with around the pawpaw and how to harvest it, the importance of handling it and using it? There seems to be, you know, a bit of a dearth of accessible, sort of entertaining, digestible information about the pawpaw and growing it. You know, there's some good information out there. KSU, University, Kentucky State University, is kind of the institutional leader on pawpaw research and has a lot of good stuff on their website and Andrew's book. Otherwise, there's not a whole lot that sort of will walk you through it in an entertaining and colorful way, which is you know what I'm working at, so that we can draw in more audience. You know, really kind of meet the people's interests, you know, work with the foodies' interest, which is a huge community, work with the people who are into indigenous plants, you know, sort of bring it into suburbia as like an edible landscape all-star, because it's a beautiful landscape tree. You know, once it's established, it's extremely carefree, and then it's abundant, it's super productive. I mean, you're talking up to 50 pounds of fruit, you know, off of a select, you know, variety that's grown in full sun and good and happy conditions. So, you know, I'm really just going to try and bring a broader audience to it. And really my ultimate goal is to bring people closer to perennial agriculture. For me, the pawpaw is kind of just a banner, you know, the poster child for getting people back in relationship with perennial food systems. You know, how do we come back to making more of our diet come from, you know, trees and shrubs, perennials that have all of these ecological benefits of, you know, holding soil, you know, reducing erosion, you know, holding more moisture, you know, creating more habitat, you know, as compared to our diet that's so heavily based on annuals, which is, you know, tilling the soil, creating erosion, you know, all of the things that that's happening to our landscape. And really, you know, what we eat is what our landscape's going to look like.
Yeah, and the pawpaw is, you know, the pawpaw is really a, and it's exotic fruit that sort of made its way up from Mexico. And can you talk a little bit about, you know, its genus and how it got up here? And it's in about 15 states now, right? And in Canada as well. And all over the world, actually.
Yes. So it is a close cousin of the custard apple and the cherimoya and the soursop. It is really the only member of that family, the Annonaceae, the Annona family. It's the only member that's come this far north. And yeah, it retreated with the glaciers. So as the glaciers receded up through North America, it slowly hitchhiked its way up to the north into the woods. And I think its native range is 26 states, and I know it's retreated all the way up into New York. Of course, it's now being grown outside of that area, and like you say, around the world. But it's a real unique phenomena in the sense that it is basically a tropical tree that is growing in the north, and it looks like it. It has these huge leaves that are like a foot long, you know, and about eight inches wide. And the fruits, you know, can be upwards of, you know, up to 1 to 2 pounds. So there's these huge mango-sized fruits that when they're perfectly ripe and you open them, they have this custard-like flesh. Usually it's yellow. Sometimes it's sort of a white cream to yellow. And then the flavors are totally tropical. You got banana, pineapple, mango. Sometimes you get hints of citrus in there. It's phenomenal in the sense that it's unlike any other fruit that we grow here. And it's extremely adaptive. It's got a deep taproot. So that taproot's going deep down into the soil and anchoring itself, maintaining the moisture it needs for that huge leaf. So when you have that huge leaf surface, you know, you've got to maintain a lot of moisture. And it will, as long as there's good humidity, happily grow out in full sun and be more productive in the sun. So, yeah, it's being experimented with, sometimes largely just for its medicinal qualities. I know that South Korea has planted like upward of 1 million pawpaw trees, you know, just mainly for its medicinal qualities, and the leaves and the twigs and a little bit in the fruit as well. It has compounds that are, I mean, they say anti-cancer. I think a lot of what it's doing is it's sort of anti, you know, microbial, potentially fungal as well. And that's one of the reasons that the deer and other wildlife don't eat the trees, which is a big benefit for us.
Yeah.
Where we have, you know, herd deer roaming around.
Well, the ancient animals, dinosaurs ate it.
Fruit.
Yes. And they, I mean, there's some reference to that. And I think when Lewis and Clark were coming back the last week, they were trying to get back to their home base. And I think they ran out of food. And I think they survived on pawpaw. They found in the draws along the river, or they were coming back. And Andrew talks about that in his book. So it has a really long history. Have you met Dale Hendricks?
Yeah, Dale's a good friend of mine.
Yeah,
he has a
pawpaw nursery. I spent a couple of days there. I did a book signing and a talk down there, and then it was pawpaw season, and there were on his deck there were a whole table full of pawpaw, and we were just slicing into them, and his neighbors were growing it and breeding it and selecting seed, and his neighbors gave me some selected seed from their varieties, Big Boy and some other ones. And I've been having trouble growing it. Even in nursery, I've been having trouble growing it. So I haven't cracked the code yet on that, but I'm working on it.
What zone are you in up there?
Well, we're actually zone 6 here at Basalt Mountain on Crimpy. Yeah. In theory, it should be growing there. I have enough understory because it likes to get started in an understory. I have all that conditions. It might be the soil type, might not be But my soils are pretty base now; they're around 7.6, so they should work. But I just haven't been able to crack that one yet.
Well,
but we're working on it.
You know, having been to your site, I was actually thinking about it today, potentially trying. I don't know if you might try this, but the pawpaws near your pond. Now, pawpaws don't like to be in standing water at all. Their roots will ferment and rot. But they like to be next to water because, again, that big leaf surface, it evapotranspirates a lot of water. So it needs to have a pretty good constant, humidity and water, access. So maybe potentially near your body of water there, it might find what it needs.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm going to try it, in that ravine right above the pond.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you can put it in full sun, what I do is just for the first 2 years is create just a little shade structure for it. You know, that could be a tomato cage with a little bit of shade netting on top,
right,
or something that just, because year three, it changes. The leaf becomes a little more leathery and it takes full sun and really grows. And the first 2 years are slow in the upward growth because it's all about growing that tap root for the first 2 years. And then year three, once it's established that tap root, it'll shoot and grow quite quickly. And then when it reaches about 6 feet tall is when it'll start to fruit. And, of course, you need two genetically different ones to create cross-pollination for them.
Right. And to write your manual, you did crowdfunding, and now you've got all the funding you need, so you're working on the manual now.
Yeah.
And
We did. We had a very successful Kickstarter campaign, now the onus is on me to fulfill it, and I'm working on a lot this summer, and we'll see if by year's end I can get something together and start getting ready to print. I think next year will be the year that it comes out.
Your website has so many different videos and. So if you give us your website so that people could look into what you're doing there and then learn more about your manual and your other things you're doing.
Yeah, it's ecologia, which is a Portuguese word for ecology. So it's ecologiadesign.com. And, I put a lot of good how-to on there as well, a lot of excerpts from my first book, and then, it's about the pawpaw and things that are upcoming. So it's a pretty informative site at this point. I've been adding to it for years now.
Yeah, I
and
enjoyed
then,
it.
Of course, and Facebook under the name of the book or my name. And then Instagram, I'm under Permaculture Ninja.
Great. Well, I just think that we have I think there are a few people in Colorado that have that are growing it down in the southeast, but I know we just have to keep trying and.
What I would recommend when you're coming to any kind of extremity of the pawpaw is to work with the seeds and the seedlings, not necessarily getting grafted trees. Or if you start with grafted trees or, take the seeds and keep growing out the seeds and, keep working with developing what works and then sharing that genetic diversity in your region. And because I know that's how it's being pushed northern right now, so it does fruit in zone 5, with the right conditions. It's experimental in zone 4. But the way that it's being experimental is that people are growing out the seeds and on that northern edge, and then they keep growing them out until they're going to get, one or two that start to fulfill its needs in that climate. So I think the same thing, in Colorado and other places, keep pushing that seed diversity and genetics to find out what's really going to work well for your area. Because the pawpaw is extremely adaptive. One of the most impressive things to me about the pawpaw is its adaptability to all kinds of conditions, its willingness to grow and to work in new environments. I think that's how it's gotten up here in the first place. So there's a lot to work with and interact with when it comes to the pawpaw.
What about some of the growers and breeders that you worked with? Andrew mentions a few in his book.
Sure. I'm really fortunate. I'm right in the same neck of the woods as Neil Peterson, who has spent his life developing some of the best pawpaw varieties out there. He's a friend of mine and lives, you know, 20 minutes away. I see him on and off every month. And he has created, largely by, you know, tracking down the old genetic diversity. So pawpaws were very celebrated 100 years ago. There was even a national competition, you know, to find the best pawpaws. So a lot of that was lost, you know, from maybe the 40s, you know, up through the, you know, to 1980 or so. So Neil went and tracked down a lot of these old pawpaw varieties and then began to sort of cross-pollinate them and grow them out. And did it really on his own. You know, it was not really funded. This is love. And he selected from, you know, all of his trials, six varieties that are named after U.S. rivers, like Shenandoah, Susquehanna, Potomac, Wabash, Rappahannock. And they are exquisite. They are wonderful pawpaws. For their size, their flavor, for their seed to pulp ratio. He really has done a great job, and I think all of his pawpaws are wonderful. If they're available, they're worth trying. Another friend of mine who lives nearby is Jim Davis. Now, Jim Davis has been growing pawpaws commercially for 20 years. He's really the only person who's done this. And he has about 1,000 pawpaw trees on about 10 acres. And what he has learned is amazing, in the sense of, you know, what are the limits of the pawpaw? What are the realities of doing this on a commercial level? And I spend a lot of time with him as well. And, you know, really because of these two guys, I've got the confidence to, you know, put together a book, you know, aside from my own experience of growing pawpaws, in my permaculture way here on our homestead. You know, I've got 60 plus pawpaws and, you know, maybe upward of 40 varieties. And I'm experimenting and learning how to use it in permaculture systems as well. So I think between, you know, at least the three of us, there's a lot of wealth information that's pretty well-rounded that I'm going to be bringing forth in the mini manual.
Well, let's talk about some of the uses. It's been used for ice cream and beer and cakes and just eating out of hand. That's one way to preserve it as well is to freeze it, right?
So the pawpaw, when it ripens, you have about 3 days to consume it. It's like a peeled banana. You know, it's gonna oxidize and it's gonna go fast. So eat your heart out. Actually, don't eat too many at once, especially if you've never had one. They're very nutrient dense. They're very almost a superfood, and they have, you know, a little bit of a natural, you know, medicinal quality like most wild foods do. So especially for people who have stopped eating wild foods, it's good to start slow. But eating it fresh is exquisite. The flavor nuances are wonderful, the aromatics. Now I'm talking about, you know, select variety. Sometimes the wild pawpaws cannot be pleasant experience. And that's one of the great reasons to be growing these select ones. And so second to that is making ice cream. Ice cream captures it because you've not heated it up. When you heat the pawpaw up, it changes its flavor profiles. So if you're going to be making a jam, you know, or if you're going to, you know, be making it into like a custard or a tart, it changes and it gets a deeper note. So you get more sort of caramel, you know, and slight hints of vanilla in there, and maybe a tad of bitterness, a little bit more bitterness, but in a good way that comes out good when you bake it. But to preserve it in its fresh state, yes, you freeze it. So you pulp it. Pulping is not easy. That's another reason that this isn't commercially known. No, it has no shelf life. It's very sensitive to bruising, and then it's not easy to process. Otherwise, I think, you know, we would know about this. It would be a household food.
Michael, we're just about out of time here, so I'm going to have to. We're going to have to wrap it up. Why don't you give us your website again?
Okay.
And I have to make an announcement for my class coming up on the 5th and the 6th of May, a workshop. So why don't you give us your website, and we're going to have to leave it at that.
Great. Yeah, I could talk about pawpaws all night. Good to cut me off. Ecologiadesign.com And thank you, Jerome.
Well, thank you for being
all
on.
All that you're doing.
Yeah, we're just loving it. So we have a workshop in May and a workshop in June, and then we have our permaculture design course coming up in July, and our permaculture academy coming up in August. If you want to tap into us, go to crmpi.org or call us at 927-4158. And we'll see you next month.
Yeah, and I'll add in there, having visited Jerome's place, Crimpy, it's phenomenal. It's an awesome, amazing learning experience. So
yeah.
I hope to be able to make it out again.
Well, I hope to have you out again, and I hope to be at your place at some time. It's a beautiful site.
Always welcome. Always welcome.
Okay.
Thanks, Jerome.
Bye-bye.